We are very clear that privacy is incredibly important, and that's why we keep drawing the analogy between cash and digital cash. So we want digital cash to be private. Reserve Bank will not be monitoring transactions, will not see the transactions. We will want to see good data protection with third-party providers.
Kia ora, folks. Welcome to the Blockchain New Zealand podcast. I'm Jeff Nicey, and today my guest is Ian Wolford. Ian has made a career working at the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, and presently he's the Director of Money and Cash, which is overseeing the CBDC, or Digital Cash, program. The RBNZ is partway through a series of consultations to get the public's feedback and opinion on a Reserve Bank-issued digital currency. In this conversation, Ian makes it clear that the Reserve Bank wants digital cash to remain as close to regular cash as possible, meaning that anonymity is preserved and spending is not tracked. Ian also highlights that innovation in banking by banks has been woeful, and they hope to encourage non-bank players to innovate here, really to provide more options for Kiwis. Ian and I start by talking about how we can preserve access to physical cash in rural areas that are really getting hammered lately. They're losing banking services because banks are pulling out. They're even pulling out their ATMs. All right, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Ian Wolford. All right, Ian, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming in today.
You're welcome.
Or should I say coming up from Wellington today? An easy warm-up for us here. I've read your bio, but I don't know much about you. How did you end up in the cash business?
In the cash business? Well, I joined the Reserve Bank from university, actually. And I started off as an economist working in the economics area. I did some overseas study. I did a sabbatical at the IMF. I've worked in the financial stability area, the prudential area, financial markets, and the last three or four years I've been working in the money and cash area, leading our work on cash system redesign, central bank digital currency, private innovation of money, and also the procurement and distribution of banknotes and coins, old school money.
Old school money. And coming out of uni, you were an economist, is that right?
That's right.
Have some traditional economics training.
Something like that.
Something like that. I didn't study economics myself, so I can only poke fun.
Yeah, fair enough.
On the topic of normal cash, regular cash, right? Now that we have digital, right, we have to sort of like classify the difference between everything. You know, is it in real life or is it online? For normal cash, RBNZ said late last year that you're going to trial this new system to help in rural areas that are sort of losing their access to cash. So can you comment on that? Where are we at with that?
Yeah, actually, just last week we made an announcement that we're now open for applications from towns. So what you're referring to is we're running some cash trials, and the idea there is we'll get about 8 or 9 towns around New Zealand who have lost their banks or lost their smart ATMs, so it's hard for them to transact and for people to get cash. We'll enter into a agreement with these towns, so we'll select 8 towns from around the country, and we'll offer a bunch of options for them. So it could be putting in a smart ATM so that you could not just do withdraw cash, but you could deposit cash, you can make change. This is important for retailers. And we're looking at trialing paying retailers for cash out, because an interesting thing based on our research is that people get their cash, about 30% of where people get their cash from is currently retailers.
Like you go to the supermarket.
You get some cash out when you do a transaction. So you get your cash from about 30% of your cash from retailers, but according to our research, retailers in New Zealand pay for about 75% of the entire cash system. So that's because of direct costs and indirect costs. You know, some of these costs can be small retailers having to travel to do their banking or pay fees to do their banking. And, you know, it becomes as banks withdraw from rural communities in particular, but even in cities, it's getting harder and harder to do your banking. What we're trying to do is trial what that might look like. And if we're paying retailers for providing that sort of service, you know, does that change the incentives? Does that change the behaviours? The other thing with these trials is looking at keeping the cash within communities. So a smart ATM that has recycling functionality. So deposit the money in. The way it works at the moment, you know, a cash in transit firm comes along, puts cash into the ATM, you withdraw it, you go to a shop, you pay them. They need to take it to the bank. The bank sends it back to the cash in transit firm. So there's a lot of movement there, whereas if you put a $10, $20 note into an ATM and then that's available for the next customer, you know, that has quite an impact on emissions, you know, carbon footprint.
Right. So, I mean, physically in the ATM, you've got a dispense pile and then you've got a deposit pile.
Yeah, more or less.
And we want to be able to, one trend into the other.
Yeah, and the machines need to be able to check to make sure that the notes are authentic, like they're not counterfeits, as we certainly don't want the machines can't be spitting out counterfeits. And they also need to make sure that the banknotes are in good condition, you know.
So these rural communities, I read it's towns of size like 1 to 10,000 approximately.
That's right.
Okay. And so when we say that they're losing their access to banks, this is because banks don't see a business case to be in town or even to uphold an ATM. Is that right?
Yeah. The we often refer to it as the bank footprint. Now, what the banks say, quite rightly, is they have a presence in a lot of areas. They have a branch. The branches aren't getting used as much. And so they see this as a cost, and then they reduce, close the branch down, and their footprint reduces. So in the lower half of the North Island over the last 20 years or so, the number of bank branches and ATMs has fallen by almost 50%, so 45% or something like that. And on the rest of the country, South Island, Upper North Island, it's around the sort of mid to high 30s. So, you know, if physically branches aren't there and you've got cash as a retailer, you're having to travel further and further.
Yeah.
And that's where the costs come into it. So, you know, ways of making it easier for people to access cash. Because when we do our surveys and engage with people through workshops, et cetera, it's pretty clear, the feedback's pretty clear. People want the option of using cash. Now, some people say, I'd like to use cash much more often. And as it gets harder for retailers to do their banking, you know, they're starting to turn off that option. And some people actually don't, you know, they might prefer to pay for things digitally. They actually don't use cash on a daily basis, but they want the option to use cash, especially if the FPOS is down or, you know, there's a cyclone or an earthquake or
right.
something.
So this is cash is king, you know. Our last big use case, right? This disaster in Hawke's Bay.
Yeah.
And so if we're going to move to talking about introducing digital cash, but we want to be able to maintain real cash, physical cash,
yep.
But we also want to introduce digital cash.
That's right.
And is one related to the other, for example, the issues from Cyclone Gabrielle?
Only in one sense. I mean, one thing, so you're right, one thing that we always say is the work that we're doing on digital cash is not to replace cash. Cash will be available for as long as people want to use it.
Good.
Right? So we have no desire to get rid of cash.
Yep.
Where the connection between physical and digital comes out of, you know, lessons from the earthquake, it's sort of a, there's a few lessons. One is that the cash system is incredibly stretched, so it's losing resilience and therefore it needs some kind of intervention. But the other lessons, when we think about digital cash that we will issue, we want it to be as similar to cash as possible. And so that's why we're quite focused on peer-to-peer. You know, if I, you know, give my nephew $5 for mowing the lawn or something, that's peer-to-peer. I could do the same, you know, with a digital form of cash. It's also private. I mean, cash is anonymous. any form of digital transaction leaves a bit of a footprint, but we want people to have confidence that digital cash will be private, right? So the Reserve Bank won't be monitoring transactions. Now, obviously, things like anti-money laundering and things like that will need to be taken into account. But by the third-party provider of the wallet, or however it works, so that's a sort of a connection. Like, in times of when the internet's down, when the power's out, we want digital cash to have the same kind of functionality as cash.
Right. So if we have we'll still have those same problems with cash, but introducing digital cash, contactless, or some sort of smart card, perhaps something like this, right? That can still work in rural areas. Can still work when
offline.
You're offline. Can still work without the power. Yeah. Where is digital cash in terms of the conversation on CBDCs? Is it a CBDC with a different name? Is that?
That's exactly what it is. So we're out currently consulting on digital cash. It's our second consultation. Our first consultation, we talked about CBDC, central bank digital currencies. And that consultation, I think, was 2021. And we said, hey, there's this thing called a CBDC. What do people think about it? What we're talking about with digital cash is a CBDC. But we sort of felt that it was a bit jargony. I mean, that's how the central bank community refers to this.
That's the technical term, yeah.
It's the technical term, central bank digital currency. We thought, you know, what we're trying to do is convey that this is, you know, the Reserve Bank is the only entity in New Zealand that can issue cash.
Yeah.
And this is just a digital form of cash. So we thought digital cash will do as a name for now.
So I agree. I think that's a good move. I think we've shied away from this term CBDC. It's a weird acronym. And I think it has almost a bad impression.
Yeah.
And I think digital cash, we know what digital means. We know what cash is.
Yeah.
And we can imagine what they're like when they fit together. Where does this, in terms of a CBDC, a lot of talk is around, you know, a distributed ledger or perhaps some tokenized blockchain type of system. Is that part of the discussion? And follow up to that, we already have a couple of New Zealand digital dollars. We have two, to be specific, that run on blockchains, though. And where do those fit into the scheme as well?
Yeah, so there's a few things in there.
Yeah.
So firstly, at the moment, we're not making decisions about the technology choice around, you know, distributed ledger technology. Yeah. For example, we have laid out, this current consultation is really talking about the high level design choices. You know, how will it work? How will people use it? What functionality does it have? And that's very, and we're talking about general use digital cash. Now, overseas, they talk quite a lot about wholesale CBDC or retail CBDC.
Right. So what's the difference there?
Yeah. So and wholesale basically would mean, you know, the banks in your system would just do large wholesale transactions. Retail means, you know, at point of sale, you can, just like you can pay with FPOST or Visa or Apple Pay or whatever, you can you could use a CBDC. We're talking generally available because we think retail is generally available is the way to go because of some of the outcomes that we want to see from the policy. I'll talk a bit more about that in a minute. So we're not at a point where we're deciding on particular technology, but what is clear is as you get into, because we currently actually have a form of digital central bank digital currency in our exchange, in our ESAS accounts, is how we implement monetary policy. So the large institutions have accounts with the Reserve Bank, and in a sense, that's a digital entry.
Yep.
That's in an account. But as we think more about the use cases, for digital cash. It does take you naturally down into the tokenization, cross-border, you know, blockchain-based technology. So we're not making decisions quite at this point, but that is definitely part of the broader discussion to be had.
What do you see on the point about use cases? What do you see as like the low-hanging fruit? What's the like highlight reel? What are the top couple of use cases that are going to be beneficial?
So we think there's a bunch of things. There's the impact on innovation. So at the moment, we think the New Zealand banking system isn't particularly innovative, and it's relatively expensive. So we think a CBDC can really spur competition. Now, some of the features that we're talking about, like offline functionality, peer-to-peer, that's certainly, you know, a degree of innovation. But when we talk about innovation, we're really talking about the private sector leading the innovation. So at the moment, you've got the banks moving very slowly. You have an open banking center. Not a lot of development in that space. We think we can change the incentives in the system quite a bit. And so, you know, part of thinking about digital cash is you need to think about the whole ecosystem. So it gets you thinking about things like digital identity, consumer digital rights. Where does that innovation come from? It comes from the fintech sector and others, and eventually banks. So that's a benefit, I guess, rather than a use case per se. But there are other so some of the use cases are things like the offline functionality, etc., in retail. I guess the big thing is we want people to have choice. You know, we're not really trying to sell our product. Like, we don't try and encourage people to use cash. We're not really sort of encouraging people to use digital cash as distinct from private forms of money. But one of the key differences between digital cash and the electronic form of money you have at the moment is the credit risk. And this is something that people don't generally think about. So you might operate entirely in a digital ecosystem, right, where your salary goes into your bank account.
Sure, sure. Rarely touch cash.
And you transact using your cards and you never touch cash. But one of the interesting things is people intuitively understand this credit risk, even if they don't explicitly think about it. So what happens when there's rumors about your bank or and we don't see that in New Zealand, right, very often. Our banks are well capitalized. But yeah, Overseas you do see it, even in countries where there is deposit insurance, like, there were images on the news several years ago now where in the UK, Northern Rock got into trouble that people's deposits to a very high level were guaranteed. They were insured. They weren't going to lose money. People still went to the bank and tried to withdraw cash,
yep,
right? And that's because intuitively they know that's a safer form of money. So there is a credit risk dimension. It also gives people choice, right? It gives people...
So issued by the Reserve Bank should be void of that credit risk.
It's void of the credit risk. The Crown stands behind, you know, the New Zealand government stands behind the money.
I like the piece about innovation. I think this is really important. And is this part of like a call out to the banks that they haven't been innovating and they've been protecting, you know, the pot and not really looking for new forms?
Yeah, well, whatever their motivation, I think we're being very explicit and have been for a few years now that we think there has been a profound lack of innovation in the New Zealand payment system. We don't have a faster payment system. It's relatively costly. So it is definitely a call out to the banks. Two or three years ago, we also did a public consultation on what we call private innovation and money. So amongst central banks around the world, you know, there's a spectrum on how people think about the fintech sector and developments and innovation and money. You know, at one end of the spectrum, you have countries saying, well, we want to be an innovation hub. We want to really encourage crypto firms and you know, blockchain-based products. We want to be a financial center. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you get people saying, or some central banks saying, we don't really like this. We want to regulate against it. Now, what we're saying is, for as part of our thinking about the future of money, that innovation's got to come from somewhere. You're going to need an ecosystem that has digital identity, consumer digital rights, the product innovation, and a regulatory setting that provides confidence in the sector. You know, there are some people that the idea of regulation, you know, really makes them very concerned, and they think, well, the whole point of crypto is it sits beyond kind of the formal sector.
Sure, they're kind of opposed there, those two, diametric.
Yeah, they're fairly diametrically opposed. But I guess where we're coming from is, if you want to see innovation, what you're going to have is entities that the general public have confidence in. And one of the ways they get confidence is that they're well regulated. And if you think about the use case of a CBDC, say back to backing, being the collateral for a stablecoin, where, you know, one of the lessons over the last few years is stablecoins haven't been particularly stable. You know, either the form of collateral disappears or it's not actually as legally robust as the stablecoin has argued. And that's where regulation can actually provide a lot of certainty. Yep. And also a CBDC can provide quite easy, you know, back-to-backing, you know, if it's designed in a way, you know, tokenized or however. So there are a lot of sort of advantages, and that's when we talk about spurring the innovation. It's that whole ecosystem type thinking that we're applying here.
And do you see industry third parties being able to come in and stand this up in collaboration with RVNZ, or is it more that it will be sort of open and allowed, or encourage them to innovate on top of it?
I think it'd be the latter. I mean, we're not quite at the point where we're designing sort of the terms and the conditions or even the product. But I think our starting point is that we would own and operate the digital cash platform. Now, we talk about it as a two-tier model. So we wouldn't have a direct relationship with the person on the street, right? So we're the first tier. The second tier will be some form of financial intermediary, that probably a bank, because banks are pretty dominant in New Zealand, but not necessarily. It could be some other financial intermediary.
Not determined yet.
Yet to be determined, yeah. But they're the ones that can build the innovation on top of the CBDC. So the CBDC won't be programmable, but you know, you could see people taking the CBDC and with their product offering, to whoever wants the product, could add in certain types of smart contracts or functionality.
This was one of my concerns when I first read that there's going to be smart contract functionality. But the idea here is that it can be integrated into mm-hmm. some external third-party app, if they need mm-hmm. to, maybe similar to the dream of open banking
that's right has
been promised a little bit. So I want to bring up privacy a little bit here. In terms of like global research into CBDCs, it seems pretty clear that citizens are apprehensive mm-hmm. and their primary concern is broad privacy concerns, yep. right? They don't want some government body being able to sort of audit their day-to-day spending.
Yep.
And in terms of CBDCs that have been stood up, I'll just cite a few examples here. Nigeria, they have launched, and it's still available, the eNaira CBDC, although it's been sort of an epic flop. Nobody in Nigeria mm-hmm. has used it, and the reason is cited that Nigerians do not trust their mm-hmm. government.
Yep.
Not that we relate to Nigeria. Maybe we relate more to Sweden. They started research as early as 2016 and have essentially put it on the shelf They haven't officially canceled it, but there hasn't been any progress on it. And then I got one more. Ecuador, tiny Central American nation, started early in 2014, and they canned it a few years later. So my question then is, you know, are Kiwis up for it? What has the response been?
Yeah, well, are Kiwis up for it? Well, that's what we're consulting on at the moment. Are they up for it? I guess I'd say a few things. We are very clear that privacy is incredibly important, and that's why we keep drawing the analogy between cash and digital cash. So we want digital cash to be private. Reserve Bank will not be monitoring transactions, will not see the transactions. We will want to see good data protection with the third-party providers. Now, people can make their choice about which third-party provider they use.
Yep.
And just as with your bank currently, if there's illegality the police get court orders or whatever to look into those transactions, then I'm sure that will still be the case. But the Reserve Bank will not be monitoring transactions. We've done quite a bit of work on privacy, and we talk about privacy by design or being privacy-centric. As part of our consultation, if you go onto our website, there are a bunch of supporting papers, and we have actually a standalone paper on privacy and why it's so important, and the what we call the ontology of privacy, the different dimensions of it, and how that needs to be built into the product. So we, you know, we're serious about this. I think one thing to say is, trust and confidence in central bank money is absolutely sort of paramount. You know, not being confident in your nation's currency is a problem for everyone, because
right.
it generates inefficiencies. And so you've got to design in those protections up front to try and give people confidence. Now, if people still are a little bit reticent, then they have a choice. You know, this is what we're saying. We're trying to build in privacy protections in a way that give people confidence. I think the other point I'd make about the uptake is, it's a bit like, you know, if you're going to have a party and, you know, you worry about two things, right? You worry about, what if I have a party and no one comes?
Of course, yeah.
And then you worry about, what if I have a party and it gets on social media and there's 2,000 people turn up? Like, too many people come. So that's something that central banks worry about a lot. Like, and the reason why they worry about too many people coming, in that analogy, what that means is that the CBDC could crowd out the private sector. Now, you don't want that. You don't want crowding out of the private sector, because we also care about financial stability.
Okay, so we don't want the banks to,
So we don't want the banks to, you know, we don't want any significant issues with the banks. We want to generate better outcomes for people. So the point I would make there in terms of uptake is, at some level, if our objectives are to drive innovation and to give people choice, the question for me, at least, is not what's the uptake. The question for me is, what's the impact? If you get an impact where people have choice and it drives better outcomes through innovation and competition, then that's a good outcome.
We're about to wrap. Maybe one point about the innovation piece. The Reserve Bank regulates the banks. Is this correct?
Mm-hmm.
So is there room here for the Reserve Bank to encourage the retail banks to be more accepting of innovation, particularly when startups come to them, come knocking and say, hey, can you bank a business account with us?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have, you know, we need to, our powers are constrained in how we can exercise them, and we do not have the powers to require banks to offer basic banking services. But that is an issue that is getting increasingly raised, particularly from the fintech sector.
Yeah.
And so we are definitely aware of it. And to some degree, you know, there are multiple ways to approach this problem. You could say, well, maybe a regulator, whether it's the Reserve Bank or Financial Markets Authority or whoever, should have the power to compel basic banking services. and that is a debate that is live, not just in New Zealand, but in other countries as well. So that's one way to solve the problem. The other way, and this is what we mean by spurring competition, is we're quite clear that in this two-tier model, it need not be a bank, which means that there will be alternatives. And that's how we can change the incentives. There will be alternatives to banks, alternative ways to access digital cash rather than simply just the banks.
A few rapid-fire questions here before we go for you. You came into AUT just now, talked to some of my students. Why did you sort of agree to come down here to a university to have a chat today?
Well, we're just trying to reach out to everyone, but obviously, you know, understanding how people think and engage with money is quite important. So, not just digital money. I mean, physical money as well. So, it's always good to be talking to students. You know, they'll have a big impact in the future. Yeah.
If you weren't directing money in cash, what would you be doing?
Well, I live on a lifestyle block and I spend a lot of time on my excavator. And I must say, it's a lot of fun.
Boys and their toys, eh?
Yeah.
Have you ever used cryptocurrency?
I have not. And this is where I lose all credibility. I have not.
Okay. Are you curious?
I'm curious in the sense that I have looked into it. I have looked at the apps. I've seen friends using it.
Yep.
But it's just something I haven't sort of got around to.
All right. Too much time operating the excavator.
Too much time in the excavator.
Who is Satoshi Nakamoto? What have you heard?
Well, no one knows who Satoshi Nakamoto is, do they? I mean, Satoshi is a Japanese male name, so maybe it's a man.
Right. We assume it's.
But he did the original Bitcoin paper, right? And is it him? Is it one person? Is it a group? Is it?
Who knows, right?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who
knows? A few different theories out
there.
I'd like
to say it's me, but it's not me.
You're in the wrong job then if it is you. Yeah. Thank you very much, Ian, for coming in today. Best of luck with collecting all of the feedback. I assure you, Blockchain New Zealand and myself will be submitting.
Great. Look forward to it and encourage everyone, all your listeners, to jump on our website, rbnz.govt.nz/digitalcash.
All right, nailed it. Thank you, Ian.
Great. Thank
Cheers.
You. Cheers.
Thanks for joining us, folks. Look out for the next episode of the Blockchain New Zealand podcast, probably in the same spot you found this one. Cheers.